Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Bald Move Prestige podcast. This time we're talking about Forrest Gump, 1994's, I don't know what you call this, feel-good dramedy, historical...
Fake biopic.
Yeah. Directed by Robert Zemeckis, who, you know, he's done a lot of shit. Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Back to the Future.
Back to the Future. I almost said Breaking Good, but no, Back to the Future. Screenplay by Eric Ross. Roth is based on the novel Forrest Gump by Winston Groom. Although, if you've done any research on Forrest Gump, that novel is a very different Forrest Gump than the one we see on screen. It's scored by Alan Silvestri, an experienced composer who did Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, The Polar Express, several Marvel Cinematic Universes, including the main theme of the Avengers and Captain America. It stars Tom Hanks, who I don't think needs any introduction to the Bald Move audience. Also Robin Wright, who was the titular princess from The Princess Bride. She's in Unbreakable, House of Cards. Gary Sinise, who also is in Of Mice and Men, Apollo 13, and The Green Mile with Tom Hanks. Michael T. Williams, who's probably most famous to the Bald Move audience as being Limehouse.
Yeah,
the benevolent ruler of Noble Hollow from season three of Justified onwards. Also Sally Field as Forrest Gump's mother, who's in Steel Magnolias, Mrs. Doubtfire, Soap Dish, etc. And introducing, I think, Haley Joel Osment.
If not, it's certainly early work from him.
Yeah, I guess he was cast from a Pizza Hut commercial. So I think this is his first ever role. But you know, he went on to later fame in the Sixth Sense, not too long after this film. Jim,
yeah,
I saw Forrest Gump when I was still in high school, and I've talked about this being of one of, like, you know, my baby's first prestige film. It's one of those PG-13 movies that I've always loved Tom Hanks. And he was big in my kind of young film appreciation, and I kind of followed his career and was rarely let down. This is a divisive film amongst people who like film. There's like 50% of people think it's schmalty crap.
Sure.
And there's 50% of people that think this is just like one of the perfect films that's ever made. There's Oscar controversies about it, which I'm sure we'll get into. But what is your experience with with Forrest Gump? What do you think of the movie?
So I saw this when I was in my mid teens, I would say, probably a few years after it came out. It must have been on. No, I mean, it had to be very close to the time that it came out, but I would have only been 12 when this dropped. So yeah, maybe I was younger than I remember, but, my friends and I all saw it, and I know that because we have friends, you and I had friends at the time, who would quote that movie relentlessly. Love to quote that fucking movie. And like, don't get me wrong, I like the movie. I think I like the quote. I like the movie less after hearing the quotes 150 times every day.
Really?
Every time I hung out. But, you know, that's just the mode I was in. Because I did that with Princess Bride, too. It was like, I've never seen Princess Bride, but I've been quoted the lines 500 times by every single one of my friends, and I don't feel like I want to watch it now. So, you know, if I have any annoyance with Forrest Gump, it's from that, because I do think that this movie is, I don't know, for a movie that's kind of about floating on the wind a little bit, it's expertly crafted.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a thing that you would describe Forrest Gump as? I feel like it's pulling all the strings, and I can fucking see it pulling all the strings. And yeah, I don't mind. It's still like really, really good.
I think that's like half of the people that hate the movie are aware of the strings being pulled. And because it is, it's playing, you know, short of getting Max Richter out to play his piano over some of these scenes. Like that's about,
yeah,
the most emotionally manipulative. This movie is very emotionally manipulative. But I think that's art, you know, like.
Sure.
I found the emotion kind of genuine, you know, like if you buy, I mean, that's the other thing is Forrest Gump's a hard character to buy with his improbable run through American history. But that's movie magic, man. And I'm firmly in the camp that like I kind of was worried because it's been probably 10 years since I've seen Forrest Gump. I've changed a lot. And, you know, there's a lot of people writing about how This movie is like fundamentally conservative and it's fundamentally anti kind of liberal. And there's a whole bunch of stuff about how terrible Jenny is and how like this is just boomer porn. And I was expecting to see, and I do see all of those things in this movie. I can see how people read in, but like at the end of the day, I really like Forrest Gump. And I was really pulling for him, and this movie got genuine emotion out of me, even knowing everything was coming. Like, you know, not to spoil too much, but the stuff that goes down with Bubba, the stuff that goes down with Jenny, it's really effective, I think. And I've changed a lot how I feel about some of the characters. Like, I used to hate Jenny. I used to hate her with a passion. And I found I'm a lot more sympathetic with her when I was watching it nowadays. But God, what a fun movie. I watched this because I couldn't sleep last night. And my plan was to get up early and watch Forrest Gump, do my research. I found myself like just, you know, it's like 1:30 in the morning, wide awake. I'm like, I'm going to fucking pull a gym. And I was worried about, man, am I going to be like, but like, this movie was wrapping up at 5:30 in the morning, me in tears, blubbering a mess. I'm like, nah, there's seeing this movie at 1 o'clock in the morning does not dampen my enthusiasm for it.
No,
I think I'm going to, like, when we get to the Oscar debate, I think I'm going to be pro Forrest Gump. I think Forrest Gump rightfully won the Oscars, all things considered. And you can make arguments,
which one?
But they're...
Because holy shit, it was nominated for a lot of Oscars.
That's the other thing, is, like, there's one that's a little shakier, but, like, Forrest Gump versus Pulp Fiction, people can have their favorites, but, like, I don't think the one film is heads and shoulders above the other.
I agree. I would lean toward Pulp Fiction. I like it more. Certainly.
It's more savory. Forrest Gump is very sweet.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I wouldn't say that Forrest Gump like stole the Oscar from out from under like the clear best winner. But
right. It's a little complicated with the Shawshank Redemption being in this conversation, because I think that's where the real, like, if you want to say that a movie got robbed of Forrest Gump, maybe. Because I think everything that Forrest Gump is doing, trying to do, Shawshank probably does better in a more adult, satisfying fashion.
Certainly there's less of that schmaltz, right? Less of that whatever it is over the top of this. There's still a veneer over the top of Shawshank, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
That magical realism almost sort of thing. But this here is just, that's what this is.
Yeah, 100%. But I like it. I think this movie succeeds largely based on the personal charm of Tom Hanks. Like, Tom Hanks is so good, and that, like, it's speaking of magic tricks, like 30 minutes in this film, I kind of forget that it's Tom Hanks. He like just is Forrest Gump, and he's always doing something. He's got this real wiggly kind of energy, and like he's doing just like. There's so many scenes like his college coach being beside himself that he took a positive role in the integration of schools, and he's like, and Forrest is in the background naked, and the coaches look at him, and he kind of does this little jaunty wave and turn. That's hilarious. I don't know where he came up with that shit. And I guess some of the lines like Hanks improvised, and he really struggled with the accent, but it's a hell of a performance. And it's hard to like empathize with Forrest, right? And to like
can be
not just be like, oh, this is all a bunch of bullshit, this is all a bunch of tall tales, but it all just, I don't know, it's something. I think it's Tom Hanks makes this script work.
Yeah, I don't know if you would consider Forrest Gump somewhere on a spectrum, or if he's just has a very low IQ or what, but I watching this movie was comparing him with like Dustin Hoffman's performance in Rain Man. And Dustin Hoffman definitely obviously is playing an autistic character, but there are a lot of similarities, right? There's like a certain way that Tom Hanks moves in this movie that makes you feel like the thing about this movie is I don't want the movie to ever make fun of Forrest for his intelligence or lack thereof. And it does at times, like his football coach is a good example, right? Like, boy, that boy is the stupidest idiot I've ever seen, but boy, can he run.
Yeah.
That is them making fun of him, but also he's so competent. He's so capable that you never feel bad for Forrest in those moments, right? You feel almost like you people don't understand what this person is capable of. You feel like these people are the stupid ones because they don't see Forrest, right?
Yeah, you can't. 100%. And the fact that, like, his mother from an early age built that kind of wall around him to where, like, you know, other people, like, you're gonna, a lot of people want to talk about you, but, like, don't listen to them. You know, stupid is a stupid does. Like, I don't like Sally Fields in a lot of stuff, but I really thought that she kills it as his mother, and some of the formative experiences he has with Jenny, and the fact that, like, that's something else about Forrest becomes his character. Like, anyone that treats him with any kind of respect or normalcy, he just has they have their lifelong loyalty for better or worse.
Yeah.
You know, Bubba, Jenny, Lieutenant Dan, his mother. And I don't know. Like I said, Forrest Gump is an essentially just really good guy. And he is, it is weird because you're right. It's like, you know, Rain Man, is institutionalized, you know, he probably, I don't know, maybe we talked about that, like a lot of work that he could maybe have some kind of more independence than he does. But like, but Forrest Gump is like the opposite. He's right where, like, clearly he's impaired, but you know, I mean, not to go to the whole Tropic Thunder speech, but the man's a war hero. He's a ping pong champion.
Yeah.
He started a successful company. Like, he's able to function and navigate in the real world. But that's, like I said, where I think we need to describe what this movie is, because I imagine a lot of people, you know, we're talking with the millennials and the Zoomers, maybe not have seen this movie. And I don't know what you think of it. I don't want you to think about it, because these were films made for our parents and their sensibilities, and it might be a little bit too much, but I like the film. This film is about Forrest Gump. It starts from his early days as a kid. He's got several things. He's got some kind of leg disability that makes him not be able to walk correctly. He's got very limited IQ. But his mother wants only the best for him, demands that he has a quality education, and that those foundations lead him on an improbable series of events, making him a college football star, a war hero, owner operator of a company, weaving in and out of U.S. history with presidents from the, like, we essentially take him from the 50s to the late 80s, early 90s. And throughout the whole film is this love line between Forrest and his childhood friend, Jenny. And, you know, that's, there's a lot, I think a lot of people are hating this film because they hate the character Jenny, which we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. It's about this man's life and the improbable, him inheriting the American dream. And yeah, that's it.
All told, like, the framing device here is he's sitting on a bus stop telling strangers about his life story, essentially.
Right.
And they kind of shuffle in one at a time and sort of catch pieces of this story as they wait for their bus and then leave. And that, to me, like, the characters I felt worst for in this movie were those bus stop people. Like, I didn't feel bad for Forrest. I felt bad for them because he is just talking a mile a minute about his shrimping and his ping pong and Jenny, and every time somebody is, like, sitting there, a new person, right, because they'll occasionally cut back to this bench, every time there's a new person sitting there, I'm like, boy, they have gotten an earful just this whole time.
Yeah, and you can, then there's like other, a huge spectrum of human reactions, like impatience and annoyance, incredulousness, but then some people that actually take the time to listen to a story come moved, and I think that's kind of an interesting surrogate for the audience, because I think that's exactly how a lot of people feel, like, this is a waste of time, it's claptrap, it's bullshit, versus this is one of the most life-affirming movies we've ever seen. So I think it's one of the most divisive great movies I can think of, just in terms of people, like, outright denying its greatness and its place in cinematic history. But I think it's really good. It had really outstanding special effects for its day. In fact, this is a trivia piece I saw. The only Oscar winning film to also get an Oscar for its special effects.
Is that true?
Maybe at the time, because, like, that can't be true of, like, Lord of the Rings. But I think it was the first movie that got you know, and you always think of that as science and science fiction fantasy. But they use this to insert the groundbreaking technique in this movie is two things. Number one, they erased Gary Sinise's legs.
Mm-hmm.
And that effect is fucking rock solid. And I saw the director, the behind the scenes of that on an old DVD, like all the things they did, the blue socks, the fact that they cut out parts of the boat when he was swimming. So they built rigs to make his like center of gravity be correct and all that. They built a fancy wheelchair that hit his legs. That shit really holds up. The other thing is they rotoscoped Forrest Gump, Tom Hanks' Forrest Gump, into a bunch of real life historical footage.
Yeah.
Of, you know, President Kennedy, Johnson, and a lot of people that there's a lot of notice for that. That effect doesn't hold up as well.
I agree. Yeah, I couldn't shocking. Help but notice a like the voice, the dialogue that they put in there doesn't match up very well to the lip movement that you see. And also, I just think like the compositing isn't perfect.
Which is wild, because I remember seeing this as a relative child, as a 17-year-old, and thinking, my God, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. How did they do that? And now I look at, like, especially Kennedy is like jib jab. That old YouTube kind of like right. We're just static pictures of face, and there's the lips kind of like South Park Canadian style. Like, it's borderline that.
Yeah, Kennedy was the worst done, but yeah, it mostly still works. I don't want to say it's terrible. The thing that I think is shocking, because we, you know, we're talking about awards and stuff that it won, and it did win for effects, best visual effects, which to me is shocking because that year The Mask was in the running. And I think, look, say what you want about the movie The Mask, but I think the effects work in that. They do some very good stylized effects. That movie lives and dies on its effects in a lot of ways. And Jim Carrey being funny, obviously.
It's almost Roger Rabbit-esque in how much they're doing the blending between live action and animation.
Right, but it's all like 3D computer work, right? This stuff is pretty new in 1994. I mean, Jurassic Park was using it, stuff like that, but not a ton of things had done it super well in a way that was like so stylized that you almost forgot that you were watching computer effects, you know?
Right.
And Forrest Gump, you know, it was using old school kind of techniques. I mean, rotoscoping had been done in fucking Star Wars 20 plus years ago, right?
Right, right.
Or almost 20 years ago. So like, I don't know. That's like the award that it won that I have the biggest complaints about.
Shaky special effects award.
Yeah, but it was nominated for so many awards. The Academy fucking loved this movie. It was nominated for 13 awards. It won 6 of them, including Best Picture. I can't say like a lot of these weren't earned. I think most of them were. It's the effects one is surprising to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the thing is, this was a monster. It made like $700 million worldwide. And this was like it hit the boomer generation right at the time where they were becoming like adults and having kids and being politicians themselves. And they were like, you know, worrying about what it meant to sell out and, you know, what their values meant. And this is just there's a lot of press written about like how Forrest Gump's kind of dimness is a little bit helps the not exactly whitewashing of U.S. history, but the nostalgic where, you know, you go back to Forrest Gump's childhood and they're and he's living in Deep South Alabama. He's named after a Confederate soldier who formed the KKK.
Yeah.
But Forrest is so oblivious to all this that like the first time he deals with racism is when they're trying to integrate Alabama. Like there is no like I saw his articles like try to find a whites only sign in Greenbow, Alabama. Mm-hmm. You're not going to find it. Because again, that then it's the way that they cast the 60s and 70s is like a time of like turmoil and confusion instead of like in history, rightfully so. That was, you know, there's a lot of crazy shit that needed to stop happening in our country, both domestically and abroad. And this was like a much needed course correction. It's kind of weird in 94 to still pick. It's like, oh, you know, and you know, but it's that's how you feel about, I guess, what baggage you're taking into the film.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members. No lunch this week, as I'll be traveling on vacation, but get ready for next week when we have the rare, elusive, dare I say premium lunch with Talitha and Aaron.
And while you're waiting for the return of the king, don't forget, May is the time to switch your Patreon tiers to make sure you maintain your full benefits by June. Stop by support.baldmove.com to check your Patreon levels to see the new benefits and decide which one is right for you.
And finally, tickets are now on sale for Badass Fest 6. Come meet us live and in person, watch a mystery badass film with us, and then hear us record the podcast right there in front of you in a theater packed with Bald Move fans. Get your details and your tickets at baldmove.com/live.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com right now to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Do we want to talk about, because there is some of the all-time great alternative casting.
I don't know about this.
Okay. The original choice to play Forrest Gump, John Travolta.
What, he passed for Pulp Fiction?
He probably passed for like fucking, what's that, Michael, where he plays the angel, or what's the one where he, Phenomenon. I don't know what he was doing. I mean, he passed it for Pulp Fiction. So like, hard to say that that was a bad career move for him. But like, I can't see it. I can't
He's
see.
He's got a big, stupid face, but not in the same way. Right?
No, I'm seeing like Welcome Back, Kotter kind of stupid idiot. And I don't think it works as well as the Greenbow Alabama type of get that guy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Bill Murray, second choice.
Oof. I don't know, man. I'm not going to say Tom Hanks isn't funny because I know he's done a lot of comedy, but
very funny, man.
Just seeing Bill Murray on screen starts to make me chuckle. I don't know if I could have gotten through this movie taking him as seriously.
Plus, there's always a little bit of cynicism.
Yeah. And that like, innocence, it just doesn't come through in his face.
Yeah. And then find the same kind of same vein, Chevy Chase.
No.
And finally, Sean Penn was in the list before Forrest Gump. Of course, he tried to recapture that Oscar gold with going full R word. And what was it? The I Am Sam? I forget what that that film was.
Yeah, he took a couple runs. He did Milk, too, which I think was another Oscar attempt.
Yeah, he actually got somewhere with that.
Did he?
Do you think, I think Sean Penn out of all this list could have probably done an interesting Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Compared to the other two, certainly he's a second choice.
Let's go talk about directors. First choice for the studio for directing, Terry Gilliam.
No, what?
Yeah, right.
Time Bandits, Munchausen, Terry Gilliam, Gilliam.
Yeah. Fear and Loathing.
There's
the cynicism. Like there's I don't know, because I guess the original book was more of that. Much was, you know, Forrest Gump had more of an edge.
Okay.
But yeah, I can't imagine Terry Gilliam version of Forrest Gump. And then Barry Sonnenfeld was also attached, but ended up directing Adam's Family Values, which, again, not exactly a misstep. David Alan Greer, Ice Cube, Dave Chappelle, all were gentlemen considered before Michael T. Williams to play Bubba. Ice Cube passed because he didn't want to play an idiot. Chappelle thought the movie would bomb. I would love to see an alternate history of Dave Chappelle as Bubba. But like Michael T. kills it.
Yeah, he does. It's almost as iconic as Forrest in a lot of ways. I know they're similar characters.
And it's very similar transformational, because you watch that and then you see his later work in like Con Air. Like I said, season three of Justified. They're not the same person, man. It's wild.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of Con Air, Dave Chappelle's in that and he plays, you know, kind of Dave Chappelle in that.
Right. Right.
I don't know that I see him as Bubba, but okay.
And final alternate casting for Jenny, Jodie Foster, Nicole Kidman, and Demi Moore, all considered before Robin Wright. I think Jodie Foster would have been a really good Jenny. The other two, I'm not sure about.
I think Demi Moore, maybe.
She's a good actor, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And Nicole Kidman is, too. I just don't see her as Jenny.
I don't see it either.
But,
you know, I didn't know who Robin Wright was at this time, because I had not seen Princess Bride.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize I had seen Princess Bride, and I had no idea that because she is a lot different in this role.
Yeah.
She's a lot harder, more, you know, rough spun and world weary. I did not associate. So like I found out years later that it was Princess Buttercup. I'm like, what? You know what? I think when I saw Unbreakable, because she's also Bruce Willis's wife, and I happened to notice that she was Princess, and I'm like, and then they're like this whole like, oh my god, she was in Forrest Gump too. It like blew my fucking mind.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to talk about? What are some things you want to steer this?
Talking about Tom Hanks as Forrest Gump and how good he is and perfect for that role. Do you want to talk about Robin Wright? I know. You said that a lot of people don't like her in this movie as Jenny. Don't like Jenny. I understood Jenny. I got Jenny.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
She is a character who is trying to figure out a life that has been very rough, and she doesn't have anyone there for her, like Forrest did, to point her in the right direction, and so she is just going off ping-ponging all over the place or pinballing all over the place trying to figure something out.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's a struggle that a lot of people feel as even nowadays, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And where she ultimately lands, I thought was, well, where she ultimately lands is in an early grave, which sucks. But before that, you know, she seems to have figured her shit out, got it together, and carved out a place in life for herself.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that. I liked that a lot.
I did too. I think that, like, I remember watching this as a kid and thinking that Jenny's arc was essentially what happens to quote unquote worldly people. Like, well, that's it. You know, start doing sex and drugs and
then it all just goes to hell. Yeah.
And then you get, because that's kind of like how our religion painted it. Like, you know, you're just essentially playing AIDS and heroin Russian roulette the second you put down the Bible. And, you know, watching it as a 44 almost 45 year old, I was a different experience, because I know, like, I think a lot of young guys watch Forrest Gump and they see Jenny as like their ultimate nightmare of like that you're permanently friend zone and she never takes you seriously, but she's always going to take advantage of you when she needs some stability and support. And then insult of insult, she's going to drop a kid on your doorstep right before she punches out on the planet. And like, I can see how that's kind of horrifying, but I don't think people consider it from Jenny's standpoint. Number one, horrible childhood.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Like, only the protective blanket of Forrest Gump's ignorance really. And that's that's very effective how they use Forrest Gump's naivete to kind of like soften some of that stuff. Like the audience gets like what horrible shit that Jenny's going through, but the movie doesn't have to come out right and say it. And I think that's also why people get mad about the way it handles some things like racism and civil rights stuff, because that same kind of like cottony gauze of his limited grasp is kind of smooths over that stuff too. But I also think that, like, yeah, if you got the payload of what's going on to Ginny, you should also get the payload of what's going on, you know, fucking Governor Wallace and all that shit. But yeah, she's got a terrible childhood with no one to look out for her. Mm-hmm. And she is a fully aware adult going into one of the most tumultuous times in American history. And she's on the right fucking stand of most things. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. she gets mixed up with some drugs and some other stuff. But yeah, and also, like, from Ginny's perspective, even if she loved Forrest, what does it look like to have I think there's a lot of it where she kind of doesn't know what the morality and ethics of engaging in a relationship with a man like this. You know, is she taking advantage of him? Does he know? Like, she says, Forrest, you don't even know what love is. And that's one of the more effective through lines of the movie. Him, you know, I'm not a very smart man, Ginny, but I do know what love is. Like, that works, because I think both of the characters at that point realize the truth of the words. But, like, up in that point, you know, what is Forrest to Ginny? Like, she was a stand-up friend to him all throughout school. They had very different lives. He went to Vietnam. She went to protest it. Like, I don't know. I felt Ginny a lot more sympathetic. And at the end, I thought it's an act of love to put Forrest together with his boy, because Forrest mm-hmm. is about to be truly alone in the world.
Yeah.
With no one to care for, no one to love. And we know how he gets like that in the movies. He might run for 3 or 4 years. Well, now he's got a child to love, and he's going to take care of. And I don't know. I felt a lot sweeter. Like, it didn't feel like she's casting him a burden. I mean, what the fuck? He's a gazillionaire.
Right.
He's got infinite resources. I don't know. I don't see it as, like, you know, oh, fucking Ginny is dropping her AIDS baby off on Forrest Gump's doorstep. So like I said, I see why people see that character and think she's terrible, but, like, I didn't get it when I was watching this version.
I do think it helps that they have Jenny and Forrest become friends when they're very young, because there's 100%. Of the potential exploitative side of that. Like, if for instance, you know, he had become a shrimp boat captain and you know, created an empire and invested in Apple stock, and then here comes this woman, Jenny, who's all messed up, can't get her shit together, and she just lives in with him for 2 years, right? That's exploitative.
Yeah.
Whereas they grew up together. She's been his rock. He's been hers in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It feels like much more of a two-way street. And they do some direct fucking comparisons here, right? You can see that they're both children of single parents. Her dad is just an awful human being, sexually abuses her. Mm-hmm. He's the worst.
His mother died when she was 5, so there's nothing to kind of shield her from that.
Right. Whereas Forrest has a mirrored experience where he's also the child of a single parent, but it's his mother, and she is extremely supportive, right? She's giving him as much, she's, you know, doing things to degrade herself, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Sleeping with fucking Bernard from Lost, the principal in this school,
right.
to give him the best life that she can. And those two experiences are similar, but so different. And I think the movie does a really good job of contrasting those two things and how they've been set off in different directions on their life path by the childhood that they had.
Yeah.
And just, like, despite their own, you know, not necessarily flaws, but, like, their own disadvantages.
Yeah, no, Ginny is, like, the anti-Gump. Like, you know, mm-hmm. he goes to college and gets a full earned scholarship because he's got this genetic gift. She goes to college, clearly has trouble, you know, paying for her tuition. She does a nude scene for Playboy for probably money, gets drummed out of her conservative school because of that. So it's like Forrest is always kind of, like, falling upwards, and, like, Ginny is always kind of falling downward. She's trying to do things. Again, she's involved in the right side of history on these things. Like, she's protesting the right things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not working out. And I guess I think that's one of the big critiques of the movie, that, like, Forrest Gump, who is this ignorant guy who just follows orders and gets rewarded, and then Ginny, who's the one that kicks against the system and is bucking the system and always gets punished. Mm-hmm. And Forrest gets the American dream, and Ginny gets an early grave. Like, from a morality, you got, like, a Goofus and Gallant situation. And I think that I think it's unintentional, but it's an unfortunate reality of, like, if you just do a plain reading of this film, it does seem to condemn Jenny and completely elevate Gump. Like, that's the thing you do. You fit in like a cog into the system. You play your role and you'll get rewarded.
Well, the hilarious thing is
bullshit.
That the women in this film are treated so poorly too. Like Jenny, you know, you mentioned the Playboy thing where she does a spread for Playboy and gets drummed out of her college for it.
Right.
And you know, her prospects are not great after that. You look at what Forrest's mom does, and the benefit that comes from that doesn't go to her. Like, she's sleeping with the principals, and she's having, you know, this rotating cast of characters in and out of her house, just trying to make it, doing the same shit that Jenny's doing, right? Mm-hmm. Except sleeping with people, not even just showing her body. She's like, you know, selling her body. And then Forrest gets all the benefits of that. The boy gets all the benefits of that, right? And it sends him down a life path that Jenny doesn't have the opportunity for.
Yeah. If his mom took a moral stance about selling her body, then Forrest Gump grows up in a probably institution. And where does he get from there?
But Jenny gets punished for that. Forrest doesn't, right?
Exactly.
Even though he's reaping the benefit of it.
That's a solid point that Forrest Gump's mother is essentially Jenny.
Yeah.
Except for she didn't get either. I'm not sure. I saw some says it's hepatitis C or some said it's AIDS, but like
cancer.
She didn't.
For Jenny. Yeah.
Yeah. So like she's like, you know, imagine. So like I don't know. I thought that I think you're 100% that like there is that element of the movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is Jenny is trying so hard to like find that path of, you know, trying to be artistically, like, she wants to be an artist. She wants to do this. She doesn't want a strip, but she can find a strip club that'll let her play music or her folk music if she is naked doing it. But even that's not like it's, she's trying to, like, she doesn't, it's not like Jenny's like, woohoo, I'm going to jump in this life. And the other thing is, like, people that like feel like that Jenny gets off easy, like, what the fuck? What would look like punishing Jenny? Oh, right. My God. It's just a sequence of degradation and deprivation. And she ends up dying after she finally gets together. Like, other than crucifying her, I don't know what else the movie could do to punish her.
You know,
man,
that might
she
be
pays
a case
for her sins.
She absolutely does. I think this is a case of the movie going overboard to kind of gloss over all these horrible details. Because, like, if you look at the two women who are important in Forrest's life, they both die prematurely of diseases, right? His mother dies of cancer. Jenny dies of either AIDS or hepatitis C, depending on whether you want to believe the Gump and Company sequel novel to this thing. But they don't show the decline, right? All they do is they say, hey, Forrest, I'm sick. They lay in bed for 5 minutes and then they're dead. And so you don't see like the punishment. The punishment is months of agony and torture while they're slowly decaying into their grave, right? And well, Forrest is sitting bedside feeding her toast that she can't fucking eat because she's too sick to her stomach and she's too weak to lift the fucking teacup. Like, they don't show you that part of it. This is the glossiness of this movie, the schmaltz of this movie that covers all of the true realities that you would see in a situation like that.
But you're right. But what they do show, her almost killing herself after a drug binge, her being physically assaulted by her fellow protesters and the men in her life, her getting, you know, drinks thrown in her face and called a whore at her job. Like, even without showing her dying of extended AIDS montage, it's pretty rough. They treat Jenny pretty rough.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. She's clearly tortured. But that I understand. I get it. You know, grow up the way Jenny grew up and you're going to be a little bit tortured.
I thought the other thing I always when I'm, you know, now that I'm living in the 2020s and I see how kind of divided and tumultuous the times are. And then I look at anything that's in the 60s and 70s. The thing that drops out is like we're not at the assassination of political figure stage. I don't know if that's because between the NSA and the FBI and the Secret Service, they're just really fucking good at stopping that shit, or we're just not quite as we're not just not at that stage yet. But like, I do take a little comfort that like we haven't had presidential candidate assassinated and things like there was a couple of attempts, some ham-fisted attempts that went down in the last 4 or 5 years. But like, that's the one thing that jumps out is like there was blood in the streets, you know, not just like riots and property damage like we saw, but like people getting killed and assassinated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if we're just not there yet or we're just a little bit more chill or the authorities are just better at clamping down on that. But like, my God, that's the other thing is like how many people died in the 60s and 70s on kind of an attempted assassination on kind of both sides. These like a lot of civil rights leaders, but George Wallace, someone tried to kill him. So I thought that was interesting. And when I'm comparing the political times,
The other like schmaltzy thing about this movie is it's PG-13. And there are moments where you really notice that it's PG-13, like the protest in DC over the war. There's a moment where like the script needs to drop two F-bombs, but the PG-13 ratings is you can only say the magic word once. And so they bleep, they have the microphone like give feedback. Yeah. Right at the moment that he says fuck, and then they do drop the F-bomb.
Nah, man, yeah.
but then, the moments later, they do drop their only, the legally allowed F-bomb in a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I don't know. It'd be weird to see a Pulp Fiction style F-bomb fest for a Gump because it's just not that type of movie.
Oh, sure.
It's unfortunate they couldn't just do the stuff where it needed to happen, but I don't know. There's
just don't write
a restraint there.
Don't write a scene where Forrest talks about he's always saying the F word over. He loves to say don't put that scene in there or don't put that dialogue in there and you're fine. You don't need to use the F word, but
Speaking of special effects, this movie has a fairly horrific and very competently executed battle scene that kind of comes out of nowhere.
Oh yeah.
I always forget about like how intense this shit is. And I do some research. It's been consistently praised by Vietnam vets is like, that's exactly how it was. Like you never see the enemy. It's just all of a sudden bullets and shit start happening and it's, you know, you can't see what's happening. Mm-hmm. Forrest's heroics, I thought that stuff was all very compelling, and the fact that like you know Forrest isn't doing this for glory or fame or even for anything, he's literally doing it for Bubba. Mm-hmm. And he gets a Medal of Honor because other wounded vets keep interrupting his quest to save Bubba. But also like that's I remember sitting here watching this movie, and the movie was kind of like, you know, had some pathos and there was some a lot of funny moments, but the you know, when you get to the, like Bubba dying in Forrest's arms, that's a really fucking moment. Yeah. It affects the person he's telling it to in the park bench. But like last night at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was the first part in a movie where I started shedding tears. And I don't know, because it's also like it's even more sad because Gump has got like a limited ability to express it. Like, I felt like, I don't know, like it's something more poignant to his, and that's all I got to say about that. Whenever there's something too painful, that's almost better than him just losing his shit like an Academy Award actor he is, which he does later. He gets there with Jenny over her grave. But like, God, what a fucking sequence that kind of has this movie has no business pulling this sequence off as well as it does. I guess
that's what I'm saying. And that's got to be part of why it won the effect stuff, too, because there are a couple of like bombing scenes that are really good.
I don't think they actually shot napalm rockets at Tom Hanks' ass that he narrowly avoided. But holy fuck, it looks like he does.
Yeah.
That scene of him running from the nape coming at him. And they filmed this shit in South Carolina. They planted like 50 palm trees in a valley in South Carolina. It's Viet fucking. And I thought, wow, this place actually went to like Laos or Cambodia or Vietnam because it looks really, really legit. The camp scene where you're meeting Lieutenant Dan for the first time and there's like all those choppers in the background, like that shit looks like Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
In the middle of this Forrest Gump movie.
Sam. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. Before we move on from the Vietnam era, I did not know this until I researched the film, but apparently Tom Hanks, they scripted the lines that he said when the military guy like unplugged the PA. And okay. He said something. That's the great thing about the movie. Like, Forrest Gump's going to say something profound and moving about Vietnam, and none of us can hear it. Mm-hmm. Did you see this? What Tom Hanks said the actual lines were?
No, I'm super curious.
It's sometimes when people go to Vietnam, they go home to their mamas without any legs. Sometimes they don't go home at all. That's a bad thing. That's all I have to say about that.
Wow.
That's what he said. Said it all, man.
I mean, for Gump, that's good. That's good. It's true.
Yeah. I'll say that something that me and Cecily quote all the time is Jenny's boyfriend at the protest. It's just a lot of times when we're apologizing for snapping at each other, we'll start it like that. It's just this war. That lying son of a bitch, Johnson. because I also really love Forrest Gump's fighting style. He just launches in with both fists pistoning. Like every single time he just flies at him. He starts pistoning punches at the guy. And yeah. I really like, this is my favorite fight sequence. Because number one, this guy has it coming. This guy's mm-hmm. a fucking blowhard. He lays hands on Ginny. That's not cool. But yeah. I love how like the Black Panther dude, like the like Panthers are coming for to separate him. And he's like, no. Let Whitey fight it out. They're all like, there's like kind of ring just watching these two white guys beat the piss out of each other at this Black Panthers headquarters. I love it. I love it.
Can I hit you with a theory for what I think the actual framework of this movie is?
Okay.
I think that this movie is all about shoes. From the very opening scene where Forrest is like, you can tell I'm looking at somebody's shoes. Then if you track Forrest's journey mm-hmm. through his life, almost every single phase of his life is marked by some distinctive type of shoe. From cleats, well, from starting with his magic legs, right, as a child, having these leg braces, to cleats when he's a football star, to army boots when he's in the military, or combat boots when he's in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Slippers when he's in the military hospital. I would say the only one I can't think for sure of a type of shoe is like ping pong shoes. I don't think there are like specific ping pong trainers or something.
He fought in his GI issued slippers, hospital slippers.
He might have.
Or he ponged.
But then you got the running shoes later on, right?
I think the boat shoes, you probably have no shoes or
boat shoes. I don't know.
I forgot about that because like I was thinking like when you're this theory is like there's a lot of like kind of meet the goddess hero archetype energy because like these shoes are often given to him by a woman, important woman figure. Like his mom gives him the magic shoes. Ginny gives him the Nikes that he runs across the country. In fact, That's the thing I noticed. Like, I always notice new things when I watch this movie. But like when they open up, he's wearing those fucking Nikes.
Yes.
Those natty ass, worn out, threadbare that Jenny gave him to go meet Jenny.
Yeah.
Because in his mind, that's like, not that these shoes are wildly inappropriate for me to wear, but like that's something that Jenny gave me. And I want her to know that I love her and think she's important.
Yeah, it's a touchstone for him. I like it. It's got a nice through line. And when you consider like how much you can tell about a person from their shoes, which is the line he says at the beginning, and the idea of like walking a mile in someone else's shoes, that whole chestnut.
Yeah,
you can sort of start to piece together like what you're supposed to get out of Forrest Gump, how you're supposed to understand Forrest, and put yourself in his shoes figuratively. And then I think it's also interesting that Lieutenant Dan, when we first meet him on the beach there in the camp, he's telling Forrest, like, here's the number one thing you got to know about in the military and being out in this jungle. Take care of your feet. Wear these specific socks. Don't let them get wet. Mm-hmm. And then he's all concerned about the socks, right? But then he loses his fucking legs. He didn't care enough about the shoes. He was all about the socks. Loses his legs. Come back and get magic legs. Just like Forrest had when he was younger. I don't know what it's saying exactly, but there's through line with shoes in this movie.
I was about to say this is Dead Man's Brew, but somewhere about 2 or 3 minutes ago, I think you talked me into it, because you're right. There's something there.
Something
about him being concerned about this thing eating the legs off of GIs, and then it does, and then he gets the magic legs, and that allows him to unlock happiness or free him from the destiny he thought he was on.
Yeah,
there's a lot of destiny versus going with the flow.
That's the actual theme of this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And like Tom Hanks synthesizes at the end. He's like, you know, I know who's right, Mama or Lieutenant Dan, whether we follow this destiny, whether we're like a feather floating on the breeze. And I think it's both.
Bookended by that feather, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it is like, if you are hell bent on doing some preconceived destiny, like, cause that's what like Lieutenant Dan was doing that. Like, yeah. You know, there's this great montage of all of his father's dying and all the wars of America. Like, I love those little montages, like Bubba's mother's and the Lieutenant Dan's.
Gary Sinise's face when he's doing that death montage. Just
dead.
Like,
yeah.
The way he's really laying funny. There dead with his eyes bulged out. It's great.
It's really fun. And just flopping like he just got shot through the heart and is dying in his ditch in Verdun or whatever. But like until he was physically unable to carry out that destiny, then he started going with the flow and like, I guess I'll do this damn shrimp boat and I'll do this. And he led to himself having a pretty, there is something that like you can't surrender to fate or destiny, but also it has its place to play. And I thought it's great symbolism because like the feather is soaring and it's going and it lands on some guy's shoulder, but he brushes it off and it finally lands at Forrest and he's the one that picks it up and does something with it. And so I think it's all like, you know, movie cinematic storytelling 101. But I think that stuff really works because it is both.
It does.
Like you have to have a plan, but also you have to be prepared to take life's when a feather is in front of you, you got to grab it and pick it up.
Mm hmm. The other thing that strikes me about those early scenes, specifically that opening scene where the feather lands on him and puts in his book and he starts talking on the park bench, the suit he's wearing, I don't know how they made such an ugly, ill-fitting suit so iconic. Because when I see like a light cream color suit now of this style, I think of Forrest Gump.
Mm-hmm. They made something I didn't notice. One of the articles I read pointed this out, that like every time they do a time jump, they always center it on Tom Hanks wearing kind of like some kind of cream colored outfit with that checkered blue periwinkle shirt. When he's a little boy, when he goes to goes to high school football, when he goes every single time they recenter him in that outfit and then they add a coat to it. I thought that was kind of a neat, but you're right. It is iconic. Mm-hmm. And it's only something like Forrest Gump can pull off.
Yeah.
The ice cream suit with the periwinkle checker and the hideous worn out Nikes.
Yeah. With those tube socks, sports socks. I don't know what he's wearing. They're bad.
I want to talk a little bit more about Gary Sinise because like he is doing such a great performance in this. You know, he got an Oscar nomination, but it's not just like the bulging, but like there's a couple of like his line readings where like he's up legless in the crow's nest and he's like, that's where we'll find shrimp, my boy. Ha ha. And he, there's a lot of things where, like, I think would come across as shitty when he's kind of like making fun of Forrest, or he's trying to joke with Forrest and Forrest is too dumb to get the joke, so he has to explain it. Mm-hmm. There's a fine line he's walking between being mean to Forrest and, because I honestly, we talked about this before, we had a Forrest Gump in our friend circle.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's always a, like, it was sometimes hard to walk the line between valuing their friendship and their humanity and also just how fucking annoying they could be with their handicaps.
Especially as a young man, as a kid.
We were teenagers dealing with this, you know. But I thought that, like, it is a deft touch that he had with those lines, like on the dock where he, you know, is talking about getting his sea legs, and Forrest Gump's like, "But you don't got," and he's like, "I know, idiot." Yeah, but just like and I think part of it is like when he's at his low point and he sticks up for Forrest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know.
And there's part of it is the fact that you understand his anger, right? You understand, like, that they make Lieutenant Dan a very sympathetic character in his own right, and sympathetic in his anger. And I think you understand that it's not directed at Forrest. It's directed at the universe. It's directed at his missed destiny. Yeah, God. Sometimes very literally directed at God.
That scene of the storm and cursing God, it's and then him, swimming at in the calm. What a great scene.
Yeah. So you don't feel like he's punching at Forrest. He's punching at everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the I just marveled at how what a line between him being kind of an antagonist to Forrest Gump and then to being genuine friends and admiration and all that kind of stuff. Plus, it's one of the cooler, like, triumphant beats, like, that they're out in this crazy storm and they're the only fishing boat left. They never found shrimp. And then, like, after that, shrimping was easy. And there's this, like, it's just shrimp everywhere. This montage of them shrimping. And it's
the line. I don't know if this song was out at the time. It probably wasn't. But there's a scene where he's, like, trying to catch shrimp and he can't catch shrimp. And he says, "Bubba taught me everything he knows about shrimping, but you know what I found out?" And I'm thinking, all right, please, please let him say shrimping ain't easy. And it comes so close. He says shrimping is tough.
Oh, man. If you said shrimping, that would have been hilarious.
Right.
I also noticed for the first time, Bubba is going around in Vietnam with a helmet. You know, because all the GIs had, like, different shit written on it in grease paint or whatever. His says, "I'd rather be shrimping." He's crawling through the jungles of Vietnam with a rifle getting shot at by Charlie. And he'd just rather be shrimping, man.
Oh, boy. I bet his car had a bumper sticker on it that said that, too.
I loved everything about it. I talked about this in a this is one of the reasons I started thinking about this movie, because I started watching clips of Forrest Gump, but everything about him being in the army, the drill sergeant screaming in his face and saying he's a genius, and, like, how oblivious both him and Bubba, like, the Bubba is, like, you know, like, the drill sergeant come in screaming and, like, interrupt his shrimp scampi speech. And then as soon as he leaves off, it's like, "Well, anyway, you can also make gum." I love those two characters and how kind of perfect they are for each other. And also, like, the bus scene, a reprise of the Ginny thing where he's like, you know, people are like, "Nah, you can't sit by me. You can't do this." And the one guy.
Movie is super cute in that way, right? The coincidences, the repeated scenarios, the ways that he gets into situations and the way they connect the dots on his journey. It's very, very cute. And in some places, it's a little too cute for my taste. Only a couple.
Give me an example.
The number one thing that I think is too cute in this movie is him on the set of this talk show with John Lennon. And he's asking him, "What's it like over in China?" And people are like, and he says, "Well, nobody got nothing." And John's is like, "No possessions?" And then,
"They don't believe in
you know,
God."
He gives him the second line of Imagine. And then he gives him the talk show host is like, "I can't imagine that." And then John Lennon's like, "It's easy if you try, dick." I'm like, this is too much. This is, like, I will grant you the Watergate thing with Nixon, but you got to take this out.
Plus, it's not only too cute, it makes John Lennon look like a massive asshole. Like, because he's kind of making fun and it doesn't feel sincere. It feels not just too cute, but it also feels very fakey, you know?
And I'll give him the Elvis Presley thing, too. I kind of liked the dancing, you know, the idea that he taught Elvis Presley how to do these moves because of his magical legs.
Show me a crazy dance, kid. Did you know who voices Elvis?
No.
Uncredited. Kurt fucking Russell.
Perfect. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
What is it? What is you, 3,000 miles to Graceland? Is that the...
I actually found, or no, yeah, he was in like an Elvis.
He is with Kevin Costner. Yeah, they're impersonators.
Yeah, yeah. They do the flying Elvis shit and stuff, right?
Oh, I don't know. I've never seen it, but.
But yeah, I found that out and I actually had to rewind the movie to see because, yeah, it's recognizably Kurt Russell doing an Elvis, but like that's a fun, uncredited too. The other thing that struck me in watching this is the running montage. That's like a triumphal note in the movie, but like watching it now, knowing I know about mental health and whatever, like it's kind of sad because he is, I don't know if it's maladaptive or not, but he's literally running from his troubles and his grief. And yeah, he says he puts the past behind, but I don't even know what that means in this context. And also for you Jenny haters, I will say that like I remember clearly how engaged and engrossed I was when, you know, him and Jenny have that little renaissance and they go, you know, it seems like they're going to make it. And then she just like they have the scene where they have sex and then it cut to the next morning and she's walking to a taxi cab. I remember fucking gasping at the audacity of this, of that when I first saw it, like how fucking brutal. And but I noticed this time, like when the taxi driver is like, hey, what are you running from? She's like, I'm not running. I think she means that she's trying to do what's best for Forrest.
She is, and it all makes sense to me once, you know, the movie catches up with itself on the park bench and he goes to visit her and see his child, little Forrest. It all starts to make sense. She tells Forrest, like, I was so messed up. Because I had questions like, why won't Jenny marry him? It doesn't seem like this is a bad thing for either of them. They both kind of want it. But she explains it as she was so messed up. She didn't feel, that she was worthy of love. And especially the type of unconditional love that Forrest is showing her. And B, she doesn't want to have Forrest tied to what she views as a very flawed person herself. So it's kind of like a selfless thing she's also doing, even though it might hurt Forrest in the moment. For the long run, she thinks that's a better option for him. And I don't know how to feel about that, but I do understand her reasoning in that moment.
Well, I try to think of what it would look like for Forrest and Jenny to have been together through the majority of this movie. And I keep thinking about like how dangerous things felt with Lieutenant Dan, like he was in his New York and things are drunk. And like Forrest could like end up dead in a fucking alley hanging out with Lieutenant Dan because he's not street smart.
No.
And like, I'm thinking the same thing of like, what would have been like for Forrest to hang around the protest culture of the 60s and the drug stuff? And it's like, it probably wouldn't have been good. So it's not only does she just feel absolutely unworthy of love. And even, you know, when she says you don't know what love is, she could just as easily be talking about herself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I felt like she was trying to protect Forrest in that moment because she just wasn't ready. She still hated herself enough that she knew that this was going to be something she saw some demons to work out, I guess.
And I think when she says I'm not running, she means that she's going to face those demons, right? She's going to get her shit together for real this time, you know, not follow some leaf floating on the wind that turns out to be a heroin needle or whatever.
Right.
This time. Right. And she goes out and she does that, right? She goes to Savannah. Is it Savannah, Georgia? And kind of creates a life for herself.
Oh, I guess that's where the square is. I'm not sure if that's literally supposed to be, but yeah. And like I said, the last 15 minutes or this or this film are just such an emotionally charged payload to deliver because you've got these, you know, they get married and that's sweet and he meets his son, which is fucking Haley Joel Osment, and he's so good and he's so sweet and he's so great at playing, and they do a lot of things because I saw a couple cynical takes that like Jenny got a love baby and then saddled Forrest with it. And I'm like, I think the movie's pretty clear that this is Forrest's kid. Like, you know, I don't know why Forrest is limited, whether it's genetic or whether it's like he got knocked in the head as a kid or whatever. But like, I think it's pretty shitty to say a guy like Forrest can't have a normal child. And the way they do, like the fact that their body language is the same, like when they watch, sit down to watch cartoons, or like when they're fishing and they both cock their head in the same way. I completely reject a theory that Jenny, you know, just gave him some random love child, like some fucking cuckoo, and said, raise this bastard child for me. I don't think that's what the movie is trying to say. That's a little.
No, you have to hate Jenny from the get go to think that in this movie. Yeah. To think that she would lie to him. I don't know where you get the idea that she would lie to Forrest, because she hasn't done it.
I'm not saying she doesn't do things to hurt Forrest. For sure she does. Hurts him so bad he runs for 4 fucking years. And as a person who's run a bit in my life, it's not fun. But it's not like the things she's doing to herself are worse, and she's paying the price as she's paying the tab as it goes. But like that last, like I just, the transitions that they get on some of these movies, in this movie, like the break of rain instantly going into the vicious battle. Ginny laying in bed and Forrest is talking this beautiful moment about all the times he thought about her while he's running, and, you know, in Vietnam, how it could be beautiful and the mountain lakes and the desert sunrises. And then out of nowhere, you died on a Saturday morning. And then I can't handle everything that happens from that, from you died on a Saturday morning until young Forrest gets on the fucking bus. Cause it's just too sad and too sweet. Yeah,
the problem with that died on a Saturday morning thing is apparently the date on the tombstone is not a Saturday. It's like a Wednesday or some shit. Yeah.
Zemeckis, crack a farmer's almanac, man. Right? Come on.
Right. Disappointing.
That sucks. Well, maybe Forrest forgot to update his calendar. You know, little details. He struggles with that kind of stuff.
Sure. This movie also has an excellent soundtrack. An amazing amount of like incredibly popular music. Like it has 4 or 5 Doors songs in it, and 3 of them are like jammed into 20 seconds as a back-to-back montage thing.
Yeah.
They spent some money on this movie. They spent like $55 million on a movie that essentially like has a big scene, right?
Yeah.
Maybe 2 of the shrimp boat stuff is pretty big, but the rest
they
of
film
it
all
locally. Shots.
That definitely, because I thought, I was like, man, they went to Vietnam or something like that. But yeah,
that helps.
They did spend them. And also, did you know that Tom Hanks did this movie for zero money?
Right, that's the other big budget boost. Right, he did it on points alone and made some money.
Yeah, I think he pocketed $20 million for the picture, which is probably more than they would have paid him outright. And God knows what it's up to now, because like Forrest Gump has not become less popular. Although I will say that it has, honestly, I feel like Forrest Gump has kind of dropped off the popular consciousness.
Yeah, they re-released this movie a few times and it didn't make much in the theaters when they re-released it.
It's weird because like Pulp Fiction and especially I feel like Shawshank Redemption is something that everyone discovers is like, oh, my God, this fucking movie. But Forrest Gump seems to be diminishing, and maybe it is like you had to see it at a particular time to where before like you get too cynical or something, so you can still remember what it felt like. Because like, yeah, I don't know how I'd feel if I watched this movie for the first time now, because I clearly remember how experience. I felt it. And, you know, as a much more conservative person, the first time I saw this, too. What else do we want to talk about here?
There's really like 2 more things that I want to talk about. First of all,
there's one big topic, the Oscars.
Oh, okay. Well, I got 2 other things. First of all, I have to say there is nothing more enjoyable in life than when Tom Hanks screams as loud as he can in his stupid, goofy voice, because Tom Hanks has a kind of goofy voice. Like
he does.
There's some element to it that's always a little funny. And when he screams, I gotta find Bubba, it's like... The way that his voice says those words is so funny to me. I just love it.
Something bit me. We just busted that out last week because we got stung by hornets in Beaver Island, and and then the way he screams, I think you should go back to Greenbow, Alabama. It is funny. It's pretty hilarious.
I love it. It's so endearing.
Also, I love the first impression of the Lieutenant Dan, where he's, you know, the boys are like, you guys are from Alabama, and he surmises some stuff, and then he goes like, anyway, Arkansas, huh? Well, Little Rock's a fine town. Like, he didn't listen right. to these guys at all. Nothing. Just everything went over his head. I thought that was really funny.
And then the last bit of, like, trivia I have, the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company is a real thing in real life. And people probably know this. Mm-hmm. And I guess I didn't realize that this was essentially whole cloth created by Paramount Pictures 2 years after this movie came out.
It's a theme concept restaurant.
Yeah. They approached some other restaurant conglomerate or whatever, or company, and said, hey, come up with a pitch for Bubba Gump Shrimp Company. And they did. And over the course of 2 years, they rolled it out, and it's now like a national chain. I'm kind of, am I surprised? Am I surprised at anything that happens in America?
Yeah. Why does that surprise you?
I don't know. Because I just,
it doesn't,
like,
happen more often.
Maybe their food is really good. I don't know. I've never been to one. Do people go to restaurants simply because of, like, do people return to Hard Rock Cafe after they've been to a Hard Rock Cafe?
That's a good question, because Hard Rock Cafe is kind of shitty.
It's just a
gimmick.
A
lot of these concepts, like Planet Hollywood, they did, like, I think maybe Bubba Gump is the one that survived, because I've still seen, there was one in Vegas last time I was there. I've seen them. I've actually been to a Bubba Gump. It was nothing special to write home about.
Right?
It's very, yeah.
I'd probably rather go to a Joe's Crab Shack. I don't know.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, that's the thing.
Like, in, I don't know. I've never been to
the casual seafood dining, you've got Red Lobster, Joe's Crab Shack, and Bubba Gump. Like, they're all...
Yeah, all kind of bad. Long John Silver's for fast food seafood.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised this happened, because I was, while you're talking about this, I'm thinking, like, yeah, Pixar could have done a Pizza Planet. You know,
sure, Toy Story stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, one other random thought I had looking at my notes is, like, they did a really good job of casting Kid Forrest Gump. That's a tough role for a kid to play, you know, and he crushes it. Like, some of the things he does so good, like making fun of the principal, fucking his mom, the slow mo, like his dawning realization that he's fast as the, like, the leg braces are kicking off of him, the way the kid emotes that.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good. He is so, him and the young Jenny both are carrying a lot of the fucking movie weight. And I feel like these aren't mentioned as some of the all time great child performances. I don't think either one of these went on and did much of anything, but yeah,
it's like young Forrest doesn't have a lot of lines. So maybe that's why.
Could be.
He's just kind of meant to sit there, but
he does. He emotes really, really well. Yeah. And like I said, does some things, like, I think this is a hard nuanced thing to do. I mean, I guess, like, the first 3 days of footage they had to throw away because Tom Hanks was so bad, struggling with the accent, struggling with the cadence, struggling with the mannerisms. And they just essentially, like, after it clicked, and Zemeckis is like, let's just not use any of these first 3 days because it's just such a, so, like, yeah, that's a hard role for two kids to play. And they did a great job. Let's talk about Oscar history.
Okay.
Was this like the 67th Oscars? But the big controversy is 1994, Forrest Gump went against Pulp Fiction and Shawshank Redemption and cleaned up. And a lot of people sense that that's one of the big snubs. Like, how does this manufactured pop culture bullshit beat these wildly original? And I guess I don't know. I think pop, like, whether you like, Pulp Fiction or Pulp or Forrest Gump is a little bit like, do you like savory or sweet? Do you like salty?
Yeah, very different movies.
They're very different movies, but I'm a little bit more sympathetic to the Shawshank Redemption, because there's a lot of that movie has the same amount of heart, if not more. It's a much more adult story. It's much more, you know, tells unflinching things about society and whatnot. I think it's a clearly better film. I don't know if I can say the same about Pulp Fiction versus Forrest Gump. I might think, they're both kind of equally fun in their way too. But Pulp Fiction doesn't have the heart, nearly the heart that Forrest Gump's got.
No, God, it's not meant to. Yeah, I guess if I were to pick Forrest Gump versus Shawshank, I probably pick Shawshank because they are, like you said, similar. But yeah, it's a tough one. Because of all those, it's very easy in retrospect to look back and say, hey, Pulp Fiction is like definitive movie here. This this is like a milestone in movie making. Whereas Shawshank and Forrest Gump, I don't think are. I think like they're a very specific thing and, you know, they do it exceptionally well, but they didn't change filmmaking, whereas I feel like Quentin Tarantino did in a lot of ways with Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, and like I was going down some of the individual awards and achievements too, and some of these are questionable too, like best adapted screenplay. Forrest Gump, we're essentially just taking the core idea of Groom's Forrest Gump and just completely changing it, versus the Shawshank Redemption adapted by from Stephen King's Rita Hayworth in the Shawshank Redemption. I don't know, man. Like, that's such a perfect adaptation that it seems weird that you just take the central character and the concept and throw everything else out, and that's the best adapted screenplay, but something that takes very difficult material and just expertly translates it to film, that didn't get it. That one is the one that I think is like, oh god, it Shawshank got fucking ripped off there. But it's hard not to give Zemeckis the direct.
I was gonna say, like, we do this in the Baldies a lot where we go back through after we've done all the debating and we look at the categories that came before the last ones we debate, because the last one tends to be like the biggest one, right? The best movie, best TV show, whatever. And you go back and you look at all the other awards you just gave out and you say, does that stand up to what we just did in the bigger category? Like, once you give Forrest Gump the best picture of the year, it's hard not to then go back and say, well, it also has to be the best adaptation, right?
Yeah.
If this is the definitive number one thing that happened this year in cinema, how can we say it's not also the best of every category that is nominating quality of an overall thing?
But I think that's also a little bit, I agree. I mean, you know, we're stupid podcasts.
I'm not saying
stuff,
they made the right or wrong call. I'm just saying idea, right? The thing that goes through your head.
I think you're right, but especially the adapted screenplay, because it's just like, it's so different. Like, I don't think the strength of Forrest Gump is it's, you know, the adapted source material.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, Shawshank Redemption is almost a direct adaptation of it. And I don't know. There's a couple others. I was shocked that, like, I forgot that Ed Wood came out in 94, too. I was like Martin Landau as Bela Lugosi jumped out at the winners, too. That's a movie I would love to do as a prestige film one of these days. The special effects was a little bit of an eye raising. It's funny that some of these categories don't have like best sound effects editing, Speed, Clear and Present Danger, and Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
There's only three films with good sound effects editing that year. What the hell?
What's the industry doing, man?
Yeah, there's only three movies that had great makeup: Ed Wood, Forrest Gump, and Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Really? Okay.
Sandra Bullock's makeup and Speed, shit. Dog shit. It's terrible. I don't know if that's true, but that's what the Academy's saying.
I don't know. Like I said, this was, I think there's others, like, I forget the year the Goodfellas came out, and what actually won.
It's like 90, right?
Yeah, something like that. But there's a couple, and this is one of the classic ones, and now that I went back and saw it, because this is something, I think we've been talking about this all of Bald Move history, like, you know, the fact that Forrest Gump beat Pulp Fiction at the Academy Awards. Now that I've seen them, and I've seen them all recently, it's a lot harder call. Now, I know there's probably people screaming that, like, this is but if you're in the, like, you know, that range of people that thinks Forrest Gump is just shit, you know, like poorly aged pop culture stuff, then yeah, clearly, Pulp Fiction, that movie will be timeless forever, you know.
Yeah.
Shawshank Redemption, period piece, timeless forever. I don't know about Forrest Gump, because again, 25, 27 years on, the results are kind of like mixed, that, like, it just doesn't seem like it had the staying power that some of these other films did.
For sure. So yeah, it's easy to sit here in 2021 and judge these things, but back then it's a little harder.
Yeah. What else do we want to talk about? Is there have we mined? Are we at the bottom, scraping the bottom of the Gump barrel?
I think so, man. I think so.
If you ever see a barrel of Gump, don't open it. Don't open it. It's probably just bad product from Bubba Gump Shrimp Product, their shrimp company. We'll have to, one of these days, we'll have to do Dances with Wolves and debate whether it's a better picture than The Goodfellas. Because I think that's a better, this is something that probably would age even less well than Forrest Gump versus Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you have to watch 3.5 hour.
Ugh. Kevin Costner,
schmaltzy, you know, Western Native American picture.
Blast.
And I've only seen it once, and I was a kid when I did it, so we'll see. But anyway, that's Forrest Gump. If you haven't seen it, it's and you're around our age at least, it's a great time. I imagine there's a lot of stuff for younger people that don't, you know, because I didn't live through any of this history. This movie stops at about the time I started paying attention. But I still like it's a good time. It's got a lot of heart. Great performance by Tom Hanks. One of the defining performances of his career.
And there
solid work by Gary Sinise, mm-hmm. Michael T. Williams, Robin Wright. Like I said, even Sally Fields, a person I think tends to overdo it a lot, is, you know, it's saying something. If I see a mother role and I got nothing to criticize about it, you know, with an actor that I don't really like. So, well, anyway, I hope you've enjoyed our kind of nostalgic look back at Forrest Gump here. We'll be back real soon with another prestige film to talk about here in Bald Move Prestige. Until that time comes, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.